It's the Rule of Threes podcast. It is Tuesday, May 29th.
That's right. We just watched the Warriors complete their second straight second half comeback. And the NBA finals are set.
That's right.
I'm Casey Lawrence.
Brand new. I'm Chris Grace. New finals, new teams.
New teams.
So different from years before.
This is exciting.
I actually don't give a shit that it's the same teams again.
I mean, the fourth sequel is always the best sequel. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rocky IV.
Godfather IV.
The Fast and Furious. Uh-huh. The Fast and the Furious, not... No, sorry. Fast and Furious.
Final Destination 4.
Yes. Saw 4. Uh-huh. Underrated.
The fourth episode of House of Cards.
Yes. God, I mean, they finally get all those plot lines going.
They finally get the House of Cards built.
Yes.
That's what that show's about.
Wait, what?
Yeah. First episode is Kevin Spacey buying a deck of cards.
Okay.
That's the whole first episode.
And then he opens up it.
Second one is him opening it up.
Then he goes tutorial watching.
He goes to How Stuff Works or something.
Yes, yeah.
Howcast. No. Casey, did you watch last night's game?
Yes, I did.
I watched. This is actually one of the only games because of my schedule this playoffs that I've gotten to sit and watch live.
Ooh.
Without knowing the outcome.
Wow.
Which I know is how most sports fans deal with it.
Most people pay for TV and sit and watch their sports.
This one, actually, I still have YouTube TV.
Oh, okay. So you got some live TV coming through.
That's
on
right.
YouTube TV.
I will say, side note, that most of the games this playoffs I've watched on YouTube TV, having DVR'd them.
Okay.
And the Golden State Warriors are the hardest team to watch on DVR.
Yeah?
Because literally the game will be... They're down 54-43.
Okay.
And you go, let me click past this commercial. You go a little too far, and they're up 64-56 or something like that. The swings are crazy.
The runs, baby. They got the runs, which is definitely how you say that.
Yep. That is the sports term.
Yeah.
They got the runs.
They got the runs.
I had consoled myself to the fact that they might lose because I do have a lot of friends and family in Houston and I would be happy for them. But during the game, I was like, fuck Houston.
It felt so weird watching them and going, okay, PJ Tucker's their second best player.
I love PJ Tucker.
I love PJ Tucker.
Or Eric Gordon's their best. Or are you saying Eric Gordon's their best player?
No.
PJ
no,
Tucker's
no,
their
no,
second best
no,
player.
No, no, no.
Their
I'm
best
saying,
player is Ryan Anderson. God.
And he looked so bad. I felt so bad for him just coming in and being like, wait, I play basketball?
It was real. He came rough. In and he was like, wait, I guard Stephen Curry? Me guard Stephen Curry?
No.
So, yeah, I love PJ Tucker. I will say the thing that I lament is I would have liked a Rockets-Celtics finals because I would have liked to see PJ Tucker versus Marcus Smart.
Ooh.
That would be great.
Yeah, that would have been great.
I almost feel like they probably wouldn't have that many conflicts because they'd be like, we kind of...
They get
we
it.
Bring the
they
same
both get
energy.
It. Yeah, they have that same look on their face after something happens. They're just like, they kind of like a mean mug into space.
Yeah.
Right?
Like vacant look.
Like looking through somebody, just being like... You can't mess with me.
They don't do too much actual glaring at somebody. They don't regard you
yeah.
as a person.
No. I mean, like, if we're going the D&D squares.
Yeah, what are they?
I would say that the two of them are, like, chaotic. Like I'd say PJ
chaotic
Tucker
neutral.
Is, like maybe a chaotic lawful while we got chaotic neutral on the Marcus Smart side. Because, like, he'll go off, but he's not, like... chaotic evil, like a Lance Stevenson.
Chaotic evil. I think chaotic evil would be like a Dante Jones.
I don't know. He feels like a neutral evil to me. Dante Jones.
Oh,
does.
He just seems like a horrible person.
Yeah, so
that's probably what
that's,
neutral
that's
evil
neutral,
is.
Yeah. Yeah. Chaotic evil is just like what?
He's a horrible person because he knows what he's doing and he's
yeah,
evil.
Yeah, yeah.
Like neutral means like he's seen both sides and he's like decided to be. Or no, his way of being is neither lawful or chaotic. It's just like
yeah. And, yeah. You know, I mean, both of us have done so many D&D sessions that we definitely know what we're talking about.
Oh, totally.
I did my first D&D session on Sunday.
Oh.
And it was not specifically Dungeons & Dragons, but it was professional wrestling themed.
Oh.
It was ridiculous. Shout out to our GM Bryson Wallace, who made it happen.
You know what's funny? I thought you just meant general manager.
Yeah, he was our
this like wrestling
both general manager and game master. It was ridiculous.
Other thoughts about last night's game?
Holy crap. Like, when are the Warriors going to do that thing where they put the whole game together? Is it ever going to happen?
Well, remember what I said in round one of this playoffs?
Yeah.
They came out and blew San Antonio away in game one. And yeah. I remember saying that our backs are against the wall, we're going to turn it on, it's going to get later and later.
Yes.
In each series. And literally this was second half of game seven is when they finally are like, okay. And I think that this is their biggest challenge. And I think it's just a natural challenge of any team that has won as much as they have.
Yeah.
They're still bored.
Yeah.
In game seven of the Western Conference Finals.
I mean, they were bored in game six with their backs against the wall. And then they're just like, oh, why don't we just win the second half?
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, one day it won't work. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I don't think it'll be this year, but
do you feel like 2016 was the year where it didn't work? Do you think that they were bored yet then?
I don't think so. I honestly think that Draymond suspension was a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I believe that was when Steph got hurt.
Yeah.
And then came back in the middle. And when you watch that games six and seven of that series, the fact that he can't get around Kevin Love on an ISO is like he's injured.
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, I know
he's injured like Chris Paul was injured. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, probably not as bad. you know what? I have no sympathy for Chris Paul.
Oh, I knew it was coming. I mean, even watching the Chris Paul cam that they had on him in the game, where it was just
slamming
like
slamming a seat.
Oh, he's so mad, and nobody wants to sit next to him. And
he also doesn't
wants
clap for his
him.
Own teammates
no,
when they make a good play.
No, he claps at them when he's like, "I want you to do better."
Yeah, people were like, "He's definitely going to be a coach." I'm like, I don't know if he will be. He's not beloved. There's a thing.
He'll definitely be a coach. So he'll get fired in two years, like Scott Skiles.
Right.
He'll be the Scott Skiles of, you know, 10 years from now.
I forgot who was it? There was a former player recently on Colin Cowherd just saying like,
Wait, you think I listen to Colin Cowherd?
No, I watch it.
Okay, got it.
Saying that Chris Paul is not liked by other players.
Oh.
He's perceived as someone who is liked by coaches and management.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a great way to get hired as a coach.
Yeah, so he will be, but I don't think he'll be a good coach.
Yeah. I mean, it just depends, right? Because you look at the types of coaches that are successful in the league today. You look at Kerr, and you look at Stevens, and you look at, you know, I mean, I would say Ty Lue is a successful coach, and there a lot of that is like, get out the way, right? It's like it's both get out the way and it's like let's try to reach them in a different way.
It's also very rare for a superstar to be a good coach.
Yeah.
In fact, I can't think of any.
Yeah. What about superstar defensive coach Tom Thibodeau?
That's right. That's right.
I mean, hey, he got those Celtics that one title. You know that all powerful Celtics team.
Uh huh.
And then. Buzzed off for the rest of eternity and runs players into the ground.
I was thinking last night that because going off of that, you know, there's the Thibodeau defensive system, which maybe is helped by having Kevin Garnett be your like
huge help.
Help defense guy.
Yeah,
maybe this 3-point heavy. Talk about high variance in the Rockets game.
I mean, that was a very low variance thing. There was no variance in the fact that they missed 27 3-pointers. That is technically a low variance.
Yes. A high variance from their typical result.
Yes.
Maybe these are things that should only be attempted with Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson and even Kevin Durant's an above average 3-point shooter. But like the things that Stephen Curry shoots are crazy.
I mean, God, the run that he put up when he put up those 11 straight points. It was just like
the one shot
that one
that
where
I could
he just
not believe
came down the court and popped.
Well, they got a rebound off of, I think, a James Harden missed three.
Okay.
They threw it to him like two steps over the half court or three, and he didn't even. It was like he was just. It was like he was throwing an alley oop pass or something.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, that shot I don't think anyone else can or should take.
Yeah. I mean, Steph even should not take that shot, but he does, and he gets away with it, and it's so fucking maddening. It's amazing.
Oh, I think it's amazing. I mean, I think that's from him and Durant last night. There were plays that were just like, oh, my God, this is The Durant 3 over Harden with like 1 second left on the and then Durant like hit like just a few like turnaround twos over I think Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
That were just like ridiculous.
Do you think that we're going to find out like sometime in the future in like a tell all book that the Warriors decided that there was some like there's like some secret Bay Area like tech capability where they're doing it for charity to give like people the ability to play as these players in real life, like get into their brains in the first half. And then in the second half, they're like,
they revert back to the real people. Okay,
we got to have the real people. It's like, it's a timeshare. It's like being John Malkovich, but for charity where they get like people who are.
Yeah. I think that's probably the next.com.
Yeah. It's going to happen. It's going to come out. This is my, you heard it here first. NBA conspiracy theory. We're like doing body snatchers.
The first quarter is like a bad 2K game.
Yes.
Someone has taken over. I do think that the Warriors have this increasing tension between like the boredom that they show.
Okay.
And I do think they have a tension to resolve between KD doesn't totally trust the system.
Okay.
You can tell.
Oh yeah, he took some shots last night that were like, what the fuck are you doing, dude?
Yeah, it's a combination of that, and I think they're too resigned to him being an ISO player.
Yeah.
So he's done a lot of ISO in this series, and having not seen all 48 minutes of all the games leading up to this one,
yeah,
there was a lot of like, well, they tried to run their action and then they give it to him. But last night they would run their action for about 9 seconds and then give it to him, and then he would ISO. Like it wasn't a lot of them seemed like half-hearted attempts to run motion or whatever.
Yeah.
And it seems a little bit like, well, we got to give KD some shots.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to bite them this year, but I think I see that as a growing issue.
Okay.
Because I think he does struggle with this like wanting to be the alpha versus not really wanting to be the alpha.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's not really an issue this year. It's just something I see, like when I see them, knowing how well they can play, it's frustrating when they even play like B-plus basketball.
Yeah, and I think part of the thing that's tough is that it comes from having a place where your like point guard is also that guy who can get up shots and maybe can get up shots better than you can sometimes, but is also willing to go through the rigmarole of running around screens and trying to get open and running plays. One of the plays that like really struck me in the first half was when he probed under the hoop, passed to Jordan Bell, and Jordan Bell passed him the ball back through his legs after he ran in out of bounds to get that three-pointer. And I was just like, how the fuck are they doing that?
I mean,
like,
that seems to be a set play for them.
That is a set play for them. It was amazing. I loved it. And I was just like, you know, what is the way you defend that? How do you defend that?
Yeah.
You know, do you bring a guy from the stands? Do you like set a photographer under the hoop in a way where Steph trips on the photographer? Like, do you have Ted Cruz who's sitting in that front row seat, like talk to Steph Curry and like make
doing
him
his
melt
Simpsons impressions?
Oh my God. Did you see the picture of Ted Cruz in the game?
Yes, I did.
It's just so funny that, you know, Ted Cruz, a born loser, just like latched on to how much the Rockets needed to lose last night.
I'm amazed by, NBA players, because Ray Allen can do this, their ability to run in one direction, plant on the other side of the three-point line. Kevin Love did a play like this at the end of one of the games.
Yeah.
And accurately shoot a three-pointer. It's like, just go to your local pickup court and try to do that. And for Steph, it's like, that's just a regular part of his flow.
Yeah.
If you watch the slow motion of that play, just if you look at his eyes as he runs around that pick, it's not like he's like, I pass it to Jordan Bell, let me run around and get to that spot and throw it up. He's just running. He's like, this is the pattern I run. Oh, here's the ball. Okay, I'll shoot it. Like, it's very relaxed in a way that like is amazing to me. I remember at the end of the game 7 of the 2010 NBA Finals.
Yeah.
I remember Rajon Rondo made a shot like that, like off of an offensive rebound where he like jumped, and Rondo, not an outside shooter, but like his ability to jump over the 3-point line set and like shoot against his momentum and make it was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just an accomplishment if I can get a shot up after that, like have the ability to take the ball and hold it in either of my hands because I have to hold it with both.
Because you're ambidextrous. You're Ben Simmons.
Oh, yeah. No, I am Ben Simmons. I'm good at everything with my right hand, and then still sometimes, for some reason, I do stuff with my left hand. It's dumb. It's bad, but I do it anyways.
I thought of a challenge for us.
Okay.
Video challenge. Please email us at ruleofthreespodcast@gmail.com if you want to see us film this.
Okay.
We each go to the pickup court. And we shoot 44 three-pointers.
Okay.
And see if we can make more than 7.
You know what? At the pickup courts, those three-point lines are much closer than they are in the NBA. So I am very excited to make 4. neither of us are going to claim any sort of skill at actual basketball.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to watch some sketch comedy, this will be sketch comedy watching us try to shoot these basketballs. Oh, man.
See if we can beat the Rockets' three-point shooting.
Yeah, we got a challenge.
The other challenge is see if we can genuinely try to shoot them and see if we can miss 27 in a row.
I don't think that can happen. I don't think that
would happen either.
I think if I'm trying, I will make one.
1 out of 20.
Here's the thing. What we have to do is we have to get a cardboard cutout of Kevin Durant and have it run at us. Maybe one of Draymond Green, like up and above us. So we have to shoot it over them.
Yes.
That'd be pretty good.
I mean, obviously that would have been a disheartening stretch of the game to Rockets fans. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's so sad.
SportsCenter put together a clip of all 27 misses in a row.
Benny Hill music?
No. If you watch that, I will say that you have to give some credit to the Warriors defense.
I mean,
they guard the 3-point line really well.
Yeah.
If you watch those 27 misses, I would say 6 or 7 of them are open.
Okay.
I will say the 6 or 7 that are open, if you're a team built around 3-point shooting, you should make some of those.
So let's see. If they had made 6 of those last night, they'd be in the NBA Finals right now.
Yeah, they would. I mean, obviously the game would go whatever way, but it would certainly ease the pressure.
Yeah.
I actually thought James Harden. I listened to the Ringer podcast after the game, and they were really harsh on James Harden for his third quarter performance. But actually, I rewatched the third quarter, and James Harden was pretty good in the third quarter.
Yeah.
When they lost that lead, like, he was pretty active. He drove. He fed Capella for, like, an alley-oop over Steph Curry.
Yeah.
There's only one really bad play by James Harden in that third quarter. It's when somebody misses. Basically, Steph gets a turnover. I think it's off of James Harden, one of his bad passes.
Okay.
But then Steph immediately turns it over. Eric Gordon, I think, picks his pocket at half court.
Okay.
And then every 9 of the 10 players run over half court
and
pretty much do an entire offensive play. So, you know, remember I was harsh on LeBron for not running back on defense.
Yeah.
Harden doesn't even break the half court line on offense after like three passes at least.
Yeah.
And it ends up being a bad Gerald Green 3-pointer.
Yeah.
Did
they make it?
No. Yeah. So that was the only play I would say. It was obviously fatigue or whatever.
Yeah. But. And I mean, you know, when you're tired, you're tired. And at the end of game 7, you're physically tired. And
I will say that was like 4 minutes into the third quarter. So it's like, if you're tired at that point,
you know, I understand that.
I wonder how. I mean, do you think there's an issue of conditioning with James Harden?
No, I really don't. Okay. No, I don't think there's an issue of conditioning. Because
he's had a fair amount of, like, out with a whimper, not a bang.
Yeah,
in playoffs.
But I mean, you know, this is somebody who has been asked to do everything all season. You know, like, there's no amount of conditioning that's going to get these guys in peak shape at this time of year.
Oh, right? Yeah. I don't mean now. I just mean, like, sort of in
general.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think, like, he's not, like, as, like, he doesn't look cut, right?
Yeah.
But that's because he's a hefty dude.
Like swimmers, he has to keep a layer of body fat.
No, it's not even body fat. It's like actual, like, strongman muscle that he has around his body because he expects to get hit a lot. And
he also expects to hit people.
Yes. He hits people. He gets hit. It's, you know, it's the back and forth. And he builds that on. He's not necessarily trying to be wiry and lean like Curry, like Durant.
Yeah.
He's trying to be the guy. He's trying to be a bowling ball a little bit as much as he can.
Yes.
And, you know, I'll tell you what else doesn't help for just the perception of it is the beard.
Yeah.
The beard makes him look a lot bigger than he actually is.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, you look at him, you're like, he's tired. He's not getting there.
And he's kind of like his general demeanor isn't a peppy one.
No. But he's very like focused, ready to go on the court. I don't think it's a conditioning thing. I think it's just like us, because no matter what happens when you run back and forth that many times, you're going to be tired, and you know, we're all people. We only have so much we can give, and you know, it's just about giving to that and more as much as you can. It's hard. You know, I don't know. I'm not here to give any James Harden slander unconditioned.
I mean, you should see us. We're very well conditioned.
We're so
I'm very conditioned to do a podcast for sure.
Yes. Oh my gosh, this podcast.
I will
is,
say I was in the middle of a Reddit argument last night and looked up some stats. During the regular season, James Harden drove to the basket, I think 17.9 times per game.
Okay.
Which sounds insanely high. And on average generated 3.9 free throw attempts out of those drives.
Okay.
He was second in the league for drives, and like, I mean, his percentage is higher. He does get more free throws per drive than almost anybody else.
Yeah.
In the playoffs was driving 22 times a game and only getting 1.9 free throws.
That's so tough.
So driving more, getting fewer free throws. I think LeBron is leading in the playoffs for the number of free throws per drive. But so this is something I don't know there. I mean, I think we knew this, that in playoffs, the whistles are a little more conservative, and Golden State had a specific attempt. Like he didn't really clamp arms on those drives much.
They're trying not to foul, you know, over the course of a series, there's going to be less. Like, just like, I don't know what's going on here. You know exactly what your opponent's moves are going to be. You know what's going to happen. You've watched the film.
Right. In regular season, you show up, you're like, oh, it's this guy. What does he do? He got me twice during this game. And if you played him again the next game, you'd be like, okay, I won't. But you're not, because it's regular season.
Or you're Klay Thompson and you foul somebody 3 times in 4 minutes.
Well, so I don't want to talk a lot about the refs in this game, because there's a lot of fucking whining about the refs.
Yes.
And also, as a Lakers fan, I never care about ref whining.
Yeah.
Because I fucking, you know, Kings, Lakers. All the way. Portland Lakers, all the way.
Yeah.
But first of all, if you're a Houston fan, you cannot complain about the refs.
No.
You cannot.
I don't think so. Because one, the tone, like, here's the thing. All you want is consistency during a game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You don't, like, if you're inconsistent from game to game, that's a game to game thing. All you want is to make sure that the refs are calling the similar level of fouls throughout the game for both teams. And I think that last night they definitely were.
Yeah, I thought they were fine. Like, I don't think they were great. I what I mean is, I think they were pretty, like, if you think they were bad, I think they were actually kind of bad in both directions. Those first...
And that evens out, baby.
The first 4 fouls in the game,
yeah,
3 of them were questionable. Because, again, I was in the middle of a Twitter argument last night, making screenshots. So the first, basically the Rockets were in the penalty from 10:48 in the first quarter until the end. They were in the penalty for almost 11 minutes.
Yeah. And when I was watching, I was like, they're already in the penalty. Like,
yeah.
It's a ridiculous thing to be in the penalty that early. And, you know,
against that team.
Yes. Yeah.
And to eventually force Klay to the bench.
Yeah.
So yes, I think you can make a real argument that like Harden got undercut a couple times on 3-point shots, and he would normally get those calls. I feel kind of neutral about the swipe, the swing through 3-pointers, because like, one, they have already kind of made the refs like not call that.
Yeah, they've taken that and made it a directive for them to be like, this and is they're goading you.
And Harden is one of the people that they made them not call it for.
Harden, Durant.
I actually thought the call where they just called it a regular foul and he got 2 free throw shots. I feel like that's the best answer.
And that's what they've been directed to do on
because like, it's not a real, I don't like fake shot attempts to get a foul call.
Here's the thing though. They should not call those as non-shooting fouls on Lonzo Ball, because that's his natural shooting motion.
That's right.
Is to do a Doctor Strange spell with the ball before he shoots it.
That's right.
And then put it above his head, sort of. Maybe to the side of his head.
To the side.
And then shoot the ball.
I think he actually sights the ball to the side of the ball.
Yeah. A little. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, everybody else in the league, that's not a shooting foul, because that's not their shooting motion.
Right.
For Lonzo and for maybe a Ferris wheel, like that would be their shooting motion. Uh-huh. You have to call that a shooting
foul. Kevin Martin and Jamal Wilkes.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, anyway, I thought the refs were fine. If you go look at the first couple foul calls in the game, there's like an arm lockup with PJ Tucker and Kevon Looney that shouldn't have been called.
Yeah, just two gritty players fighting real hard for some grit.
Eric Gordon going to the, good Lord, the dogs in this neighborhood. Eric Gordon going to the basket. Clay doing a decent contest, and literally Eric Gordon just loses the ball on his own.
Uh-huh.
And then the Clay gets called for a clamp where. I have a screenshot of James Harden pulling Clay's jersey towards him.
Ooh.
Like, that's a foul. That's either a no call or not a foul on Clay. So there were some other bad calls, but yeah. I didn't think it was egregious. I think only a Rockets fan would think it was egregious.
Yeah. And I mean, mostly because it felt like they were letting them play. To me, when you're losing, you're like, I don't want this. I don't want them to be let play. I want fouls to be called so my team can benefit and try to get this back.
But
if you're winning and they're letting you play, it's like, it's fair, man. It's fair. They're letting them play.
Letting them play also is kind of fun to watch. I think the game's more fun when it's more physical.
It's more physical, and it feels tense in a way where they're like, they're not doing what they want to do because they're not being allowed to do it by the defense. It's like, there were a lot of sequences in the game yesterday where it was like, they can't do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is an interesting thing, because what do you do after that?
I was most impressed probably by, on Steph's side, aside from that, like, baseball shot, there was a drive where he, like, just, like, turned to the side and, like, muscled through.
Yeah.
Ariza.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a very strong shot.
So strong. And, I mean, James Harden had a couple of those really strong layups, too.
Yeah.
I think it was a strong layup game.
And Eric Gordon, I couldn't tell. I wish they replayed it. It seemed like he dunked it, sort of. I couldn't tell if he dunked it or if he attempted to dunk it and KD blocked it and it still went in.
Yeah.
I love Eric Gordon.
You know what? He played so well this series.
I think that, like, I just want players to play with passion.
Yeah. And Eric Gordon showed that he can do that.
Oh, yeah. Was Eric Gordon part of the Chris Paul Lakers trade back in the day? Or was he part of the Clippers trade?
He was part of the Clippers trade. Okay. He went to New Orleans in that
trade. I remember
Eric
Gordon at one point being like he's the next guy. And I remember him
being
like,
he came out of Indiana. The Clippers drafted him. I think it was like 6th or 10th or something.
I remember it being like he's at the guard position, like a pound for pound, like as strong as LeBron and Russell Westbrook.
Whoa.
Like, because he's a lot to handle at his size. Cause I think he's like probably a 6'2" or something like that.
Oh, he's 6'4".
He's listed at 6'4".
Yeah.
Which means he's probably 6'2". I mean, PJ Tucker's listed at 6'6", which I don't believe.
I think PJ Tucker, like, it feels like he's shorter because he's so squat.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Okay, let me say this about the Rockets defense.
Okay, yes.
We can talk about Cavs Celtics.
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah. Don't worry. We have devoted a half an hour of this podcast to talking about this game. But we got one last thing to say about the Rockets.
Okay, first of all, obviously Ryan Anderson is a problem on defense.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to talk about Ryan Anderson's defense.
Yeah, we don't need to. But I will say that in the modern NBA, there's a lot of switching going on, right? There's plays, if you rewatch that game, there's plays where Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon get switched into bad matchups where they're giving up the switch at half court with no pick. Like, they're not getting pushed off.
Yeah.
And I think this is a part of the switching defense that needs to be reexamined, where it's like, you're the Warriors, if you give them the matchup they want, they will give it to them. So Eric Gordon cannot guard Kevin Durant.
No.
So I don't understand why you're giving them a matchup without any pressure.
Okay, so here is why I see that happening, right? If you give the switch up early, that gives you more time to set your help defense. Because if you're not confident that your team can fight through that switch at the three-point line or just inside the three-point line.
It's just outside, though, is when they're giving it up sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, if you give it up on the outside, you have more room to set up. The further you give up that switch,
oh, I see what you're saying,
the more you have to set up your help defense in the back, which is not to say that it's a good thing, but it might be the only thing that works if you don't feel like your help defense can set up correctly on a switch that would happen a lot closer to the basket with lot less time to deflect and prepare.
I just think it's so weird.
It's weird. It does feel weird.
They
You're
did some weird
that.
Cross matches where they would sometimes put Eric Gordon on a taller player. And then when you give up the switch like that, it's almost like, well, why didn't you just match up that way from the beginning? Like, you're literally just, it's four players not moving very fast.
Yeah.
And two guys just are like, okay, I have this guy now.
I mean, I feel like I'm galaxy braining a little bit to try to explain this, mm-hmm. because like, I don't know if this is actually how they're thinking about it, but you know, the Warriors try to create that specific, like, chaotic style of offense where they're running people around, and getting a switch at a specific time is a win for the Warriors. If they can't get that switch at that specific time, they may not be able to run that action in the way that they wanted to. And it seems to me like maybe you're like shooting yourself in the foot to try to prevent your leg getting chopped off.
Uh-huh.
But it's not. It doesn't feel like that is something that they were doing out of a lack of effort. It felt like they were trying to do a specific, like, we're going to do this. We're going to give this a try.
It's definitely not lack of effort because there was no effort involved. I question the philosophy.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm sure Daryl's got a bunch of stats that say we do this. But first of all, the help defense doesn't matter if Kevin Durant just... if he just literally turns and just shoots over Eric Gordon,
yeah,
who provides no pressure on a shot.
I mean, was the man currently, like, was Trevor Ariza going to provide him the pressure that he...
I mean, a little more. And one of the switches that Ariza just gave up, Kevin Durant just, like faded to the basket and Curry just threw him a layup. Some of that might be fatigue in that we're not doing these switches with the precision that we want.
Yeah.
Because we're letting sort of like lanes to the basket open up when we really don't. And obviously some of that is just the brilliance of the Warriors, where like they're pretty opportunistic about like, oh, you put your weight the wrong way, I'm going to the basket.
Yeah.
But they were just, especially with Anderson.
Yeah.
Maybe they should just switch him back to the bench. Like, maybe if the switch happens and he just sits down.
Yeah, I mean, that to me sounds like a great idea. And, you know, I feel bad because he just didn't have the game time to be ready.
Yeah,
in the
series. I mean,
and, you know.
I don't think he took a 3-point shot either.
No.
Which is then, why is he out there at all?
Yeah, I mean, because he's a body and he's not, you know, whatever dumb person they didn't have. I mean, I don't know the Rockets bench past those guys. Like, they weren't going to put out...
Mbambu Day was hurt,
basically. He's been hurt. Chinezu...
They have a long roster. In fact, let's talk about... they actually aren't in that great shape contract-wise.
No. They're a little tough. But I think we gotta focus on... Celtics. So we're going to talk contracts.
Okay, we'll come back to, like, yes.
Like, maybe at another time, another podcast.
Well, we got to say goodbye to these teams.
We do. First things first, we got to talk about LeBron James carrying the Cavaliers to victory in games 6 and 7.
Uh-huh.
Right? We're in it right now. We don't have the bird's eye view of what this means for LeBron in the long term, right? I don't feel like I have the perspective right now because it's so focused on watching him go out there and put up these stat lines that are like both integral to them winning and impressive in a way that just doesn't make any sense over the course of time. I don't know. I'm blown away. I'm somebody who is blown away by what LeBron is doing. And I, if you can't see me right now, I just put my arms up in a way that expresses myself. It's just like, what the fuck? What the fuck is going on? I mean, it's so nuts that this shit ass Cavaliers team is in the NBA finals. This team is not good, but they are good. They're in the finals. It blows my fucking mind.
Yeah. I actually think the narrative isn't going to change that much.
No.
Because I think they're going to lose again. Well, what I mean is, like, I don't think it's going to really raise or lower his legacy. It's not going to change the narrative in any particular way.
Got it.
I think, I really wish, like, we could go back and, like, remix the last 10 years and just, like, reseed all the playoffs, like, East and West. Because, I mean, I do think... that the Rockets were the second best team in the league.
Yeah.
Arguably the best team in the league. But yeah, I don't know. I have no... I'm like basically agnostic about LeBron this year.
Oh, okay.
Because my real feeling is like he's just beating up on the JV.
Okay. And you cannot say that just because he beat up on Jonas Valanciunas in the semis. Okay. That's not fair. He did beat up on the JV. I love the JV. He's my guy. Yeah. Okay?
When I say JV, I mean,
I know.
Jonas Valanciunas.
Yes. Yeah.
Or Jim Varney.
Jim Varney. Rest his soul. Yep. Jim Varney. We got to get an Ernest Scared Stupid shout out. Who's ready for the scariest horror movie of all time? Ernest Scared Stupid.
That's right. By the way, I was in Orlando, and I believe Ernest Saves Christmas, some parts of that were shot there.
Ooh. You're out doing the touristy, the Orlando style tour bus.
Yeah, I'm just doing the things
bus.
You do in Orlando. Yeah. I would say the top lanes, go see all the Ernest Saves Christmas places.
That's good. Yeah, definitely.
SeaWorld.
Top three Christmas movies.
You go eat, get some wings at Gators.
Yes, of course.
And then you just leave. There's nothing else to do in Orlando.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, except, you know, go see Thrones the Musical at the Orlando Fringe Festival.
As, by the way, we were the patrons pick for our venue, and we sold the most tickets out of every show at the Fringe this year.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Congratulations.
And we won best original score.
Yes.
So,
let's talk a little bit about, like, games 6 and 7.
Well, how do you feel about... First of all, the Celtics are in great position for next year.
They're in.
So I'm not. They had a great year.
I don't feel sad for them.
And obviously we're not sad that they didn't get in because they're the Celtics. And also, Jordan and Larry getting into the finals is great.
Oh,
but like I don't see how you could be. This is the thing. You obviously have to be happy with the season if you're a Celtics fan, right?
Yes.
But I actually do think you could be justifiably like frustrated. Like these particular games, there were moments that would be frustrating to you as a fan.
Yeah.
Of like, yes, it's great that we got this far and we should be happy with how we did. However, we could have gone farther if X, Y, and Z had happened.
Yeah. I mean,
and like, if certain people hadn't shot the ball so many times in game 7.
Ooh.
I mean, how many shots did Tatum end up taking? Like you would want him to take twice as many.
Yeah, he took a lot of shots. I mean, he led that team in scoring. And if only there was the opportunity for him to have led them to a win.
If he had taken another 20 shots,
and
just forced them when everyone
if he turned into Kevin Durant for a game.
Kevin Durant or Kobe or whoever.
Yes.
Which probably Tatum, that is a mentality that he has the skills to adopt that mentality.
Yeah.
And he probably should.
And he's got a mentality to make that kind of stuff happen.
Yeah.
That dunk that he crammed on LeBron's face was so nice.
Yeah. Pretty incredible draft pick, by the
way. Yeah. Yes. Especially to get another pick for picking him.
Yeah.
I mean,
Ainge
come on.
Does know what he's doing.
Get out of here.
And especially this year when he lets go of Marcus Smart. No. So if, let's say Tatum had forced another 20 shots, I don't think he would have shot as poorly as those other Celtics did.
No. And I mean, we got to see the scary side of Scary Terry in game 7. It was, and that's tough because he played really well this postseason overall.
Yeah.
Right. It's so tough to watch them go down in game 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Where I feel like Terry Rozier had a pretty decent game 6. He was
Oh no, he had a good game 6.
Yeah, good game 6, right? He was the one who scored for them.
Yeah. Not a good game 7.
No. And you know, I mean
some of this is, but like they're a young team. How many years is he in the league?
This is his third year?
Yeah. So they're young guys and like, I mean, this is a great run for them playoff wise. So there's that they're going to be very up and down.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see them reintegrate Kyrie and Gordon into this.
I think they'll fit like a glove.
Yeah, I think the Celtics will fit too.
No matter where LeBron signs, the Celtics are the clear-cut favorite next year.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
I don't see another East team that the only one would be Philly, but like that he joins and then is a favorite to beat this team.
Yeah.
And that remains to be seen, like, how he would integrate with Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
Side note, people saying, like, he should join the Rockets. Like, I know that they made it work with one ball between the two of them, but, like, one ball between the three of them?
Well, okay, if they have three of them on that team, you do have to give them an extra ball. Like, that's in the CBA.
That's right.
If you have...
I mean, and Chris Paul helped negotiate that CBA. Yeah. So.
I mean, he's the union president for a reason. You get him on there so that you can have that second ball on the court.
Exactly.
The only thing is that each ball counts for half a point, so you have to be twice as efficient.
I think they'd be okay with that, actually.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah. Do you want to talk more? I don't have a ton to say about the Cavs Celtics. I don't have a ton to say about that series because I
want to talk about Jeff Green.
Oh.
All right.
Jeff Green.
Jeff Green. Not a favorite player of mine.
No.
Jeff Green, it feels like he has done the wrong thing in a basketball situation 9 times out of 10. And I need to...
11 times out of 10.
I need to sit here and give Jeff Green a little bit of credit for playing really, really well down the stretch in this series.
I mean, always a very talented player.
Yes. I mean, he's you know, I'm not going to say like he's finally put it all together
in a way.
These are two good games, right?
No.
He played great. And I like he played great on defense, which is like Jeff Green, great on defense. Like that to me, watching him play well in a way that it felt like Kevin Love played well in the opposite way, where he'd like not be as good on defense, but he'd be able to make threes, get rebounds, and you know, get some free throws. It felt like he was the anti-Kevin Love in a way that,
he
like...
He is the anti-Kevin Love in general.
Yeah. In a way that they needed that, and I think that he's a big reason why they are in the NBA Finals right now, which, to me, hearing those words come out of my mouth is so strange.
It is. I mean, you know... I mean, he just gets it from his dad, first of all, AC.
AC, of course.
Who, you know, obviously was a very pure player, saved himself for the game only. No, I mean, you know, you never know when a player, first of all, I don't necessarily think he's put it together for the next series, but you never know when it clicks for these players. Like, I think he's always been somebody who, like, you could pull, like, whoa. Like, yes. Highlight.
Yeah, I think...
Gerald Green was like that, too, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, like, why he's still in the league, and it's because of that wow factor, because you're like, he could do this, like, in a Michael Beasley way.
Yeah.
You know, where Michael Beasley has that game where he scores 30 points, and you're like, oh, shit, Michael Beasley.
Yeah.
You know, It's the thing where those guys have to learn how to settle into a team later in their career and
find a role for themselves that is not what they thought they were when they were in the AAU.
Yes.
You know, when they thought they were going to be the man and everybody is telling them that they're going to. I will say that as a LeBron dissident, that this does highlight people like LeBron who are like, able to put consistency together, you know, like I will say LeBron's probably the most physically talented person that's ever been in the league.
Okay.
But he also has a mental approach that allows him to bring pretty much at worst a B- game every 10 games.
Yeah. It was the streak. He like hadn't scored under 10 points in a game in like the history of his career.
And
basically.
I think that is something that, player like Jeff Green, who's, I mean, not as talented as LeBron, but like it was way more up and down than him. Yeah. You know, there's probably other players that are like only like 15 point a game players, but some of them can sort of reliably give you between 12 and 15 points a game.
Yeah.
And that consistency, it's like, it's tough to build a team around somebody like Jeff Green.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know what you're getting from one game to the next.
Yeah. 100%. So I do have one more thing to say about the series.
Oh.
And I think you're going to know what I'm talking about. We need to talk about Kobe's tweet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think I was dead on a couple weeks ago.
I think you were. I have to admit this. I said that I think Kobe would respect LeBron and appreciate his game.
Yes.
And
I think he does, but I don't think he sees him on the same level.
I don't think he does, which is dumb because LeBron is above Kobe in my mind.
Oh, no. I was thinking today, though, like that I am so glad that I root for Kobe and not for LeBron. Like, if you had to go back and say, like, you're going to end up being a Kobe fan or a LeBron fan, it is so much better to be a Kobe fan.
I guess that depends on what you want as a person. That's fine.
Victories and excellence.
I mean,
not too many crushing losses.
That's and I guess to stick with one team, that's another thing that is good for.
But also, like I mean, I've seen Kobe. This is, I'm not really trying to make a rings argument, but I've only seen Kobe lose two finals.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen him win five.
Yeah.
So
5-2.
It is more fun to watch a player win five than to about to lose six.
Yeah. But he's won three, you know, and, yeah. And I mean, just from a like overall greatness standpoint, I don't think that it's much of a debate that LeBron has had the better career overall, right? Yes, he has had two fewer finals victories so far, mm-hmm. but overall, he has had the better and more consistent career. Just from,
yeah, I mean, I would say,
from a stat standpoint, but also from a just like winning games standpoint. Like, he, I think, over his career has a better winning percentage in the regular season than Kobe.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
You know, like,
I would say, for example, Kareem has a better career than Kobe, probably. But, like, and I still, like, I'm glad I watched Kobe's career more. I mean, I watched the end of Kareem's career.
Yeah, that very fair. You know, yeah. About what you personally like. And I don't think we should be getting into a, like, Kobe versus LeBron debate now. We can have that debate live.
It's pretty
on
unwinnable.
Stage. Yeah. Well, yeah. And, I mean, he does kind of say that. So let me read you Kobe Bryant's
tweet. Exactly what this tweet's about.
He says, "We can enjoy one without tearing down one. I love what he's doing," and the he that he's talking about is LeBron.
Jesus.
Yeah. "Don't debate what can't be definitively won by anyone." Okay, he says that, "Don't debate what can't be definitively won by anyone," and then he has hashtags, and his hashtags are, "Enjoy my five," which means enjoy his five championships.
Yep.
Hashtag enjoy MJ6.
Okay. These numbers are going up.
And then hashtag enjoy LBJ quest.
Yes.
So... honestly, I don't think there's a shadier tweet that I've seen in the past month than this incredibly shady tweet from Kobe Bryant.
I mean, except Roseanne's tweet from today.
Yeah, I mean, that tweet wasn't even shady. That tweet was just fucked up.
Just racist garbage.
And because this one is like, he comes out and he's like, "Oh, I'm praising him." And then he says, "Enjoy LBJ quest," which is just... that cuts. That cuts real deep.
The thing is, though, is he can't say enjoy LBJ 3. Because that's like, enjoy my 5, enjoy his 6, enjoy his 3.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, it could be 4 at the end of this season if everyone in the Bay Area dies from, you know, the same thing that got... what was that movie where... oh, and it was South Park.
That movie South Park. That movie that comes out once a week?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. I think it's clear how Kobe feels.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
I think he does respect his game, but, like, I mean, Kobe probably never, he's never going to defer to anybody. Like,
yeah.
He,
and he that's did, part of being,
he didn't
that
defer
mentality.
To Jordan when they were in the same All-Star game together.
No, he didn't defer to anybody.
And then he blocked LeBron twice in the All-Star game.
Ooh. Yeah. You know, those All-Star games, they mean something.
I mean, none of this means anything.
Yeah. Okay. None of this means anything when that's rude, because some of this means something and the All-Star game means nothing.
Maybe. I will say I would like to thank the Warriors for avoiding my nightmare scenario, which was going to be actually couldn't decide what the nightmare scenario was. One of my nightmare scenarios was they get to the finals, Chris Paul cannot play, and then LeBron wins another ring.
Ooh.
That was one. But then the other nightmare scenario is Chris Paul getting a ring. So thank you for avoiding that.
Yeah, we're safe. We're safe from your nightmare.
I would have preferred a Warriors Celtics final. I will say that, like, I've been saying this for a couple of weeks, but we need to resolve our haterade towards these teams, because, and here's, I think, something that shows that you're in a hater mode, because you can say this about LeBron and me, which is you end up with these contradictory positions that don't make any sense.
Yeah.
So,
hater mode incoming.
The thing is like, if you say, like, okay, the Warriors have had so much injury luck on their way to the finals, but, like, so has LeBron. Like, LeBron just faced a team without their top two players.
Yeah, everybody's had injury luck.
I think that, like, people can't resolve the, did KD break the league or were they lucky to win that series? Like, I don't think those two things are compatible. If he broke the league and it's so inevitable that the Warriors win every, like, championship, then you can't also say that, like, Draymond sucks and Clay sucks and all that.
I will say this. I was nervous during Game 6 and Game 7 in the first half. I was incredibly nervous that the Warriors were going to lose. Like I did not think it was an inevitability that they were going to win.
Yeah.
I mean, until, like, at some point during the fourth quarter when they were by 20 or 10.
For having two seven-game series...
Yeah.
Did you think they were good series?
I thought that the Cavs-Celtics series was a mediocre series until the last three games when I thought it became a really good series.
Okay.
Then I think the Warriors-Rockets series was a good series. I don't think it was a great series, but I think that it was a good series in that both teams showed excellent at some point in each game. And while it would have been really nice for those periods of excellence to match up at some point, basketball is not really a game where that stands out when both teams are making a ton of shots. Like, that just seems like a high scoring quarter where nobody was playing defense. That's what it seems like happening.
Even though it might just be amazing.
It might just be amazing shot making. I think that that excellence that comes out in the runs, you know, we talked about it at the top. This series had the runs.
Yeah. This series was diarrheal.
Yeah. This series was the shit.
Yeah. The liquid shit. That's what Siri figured. I wish that I'd like to know how many quarters both teams scored 30 points. I think very few.
Yeah.
For a team that scored 50 in one quarter, in game six, they scored 25 points in the half.
That half was so bad.
That's the only thing I'm disappointed about that series is that I kind of do want to see, like, two great offensive teams throwing haymakers at each other. And I don't think we got that this entire playoffs.
I think that that is true.
How are you feeling about this finals?
I'm feeling pretty good. I think we're going to have to come back on Thursday and do a finals preview.
When is the first game?
It's Thursday.
Okay. Yeah.
That being said, I do want to, like,
let's do a finals preview on Thursday.
Yeah.
We'll make a prediction on Thursday, depending on Iguodala's health. An underrated scratch from those games.
Yes.
Especially because you can see Draymond starting to get a little crazy sometimes.
There was...
As, like, a second-tier casual Warriors fan last night, the number of times I was like, come on, man, what are you going to do? Get out of here! Like, if you're going to shoot a three-pointer, at least get over the front rim.
I did not want Draymond to shoot any of the three-pointers that he shot.
I want him to shoot them. I just want them to be a better attempt.
I didn't want him to go in. I didn't want him to shoot them. I mean, like, I just was like, I don't think that, I think that, like, yes, the ones at the end of the shot clock, take those. I guess the ones when you're wide open, take those. But I was just like, so
he gets
nervous.
Wide open three pointers though, and I think he does. I think you need to take them to keep the offensive integrity.
That's fair. So we got two teams that are gone.
Yes.
You started off. What do you want to do?
Let's do Celtics. I almost said Celtics.
let's do a Celtic dance.
The Boston Celtics. I am going to miss the scrappiness of the Boston Celtics as embodied by Marcus Smart, believe it or not. The Celtics are actually an easy team to like, I think.
It hurts me a lot to say it, but yes, I agree. I think that it's easy to like.
I think it's easy to like when they are not really threatening to win anything. they might not be an easy team to like when Kyrie's back.
Yeah.
Because Kyrie, who I actually really think is an incredible player, is kind of hateable.
Yeah.
I think Gordon Hayward's fine. I don't have any.
I think it's much easier to hate someone when the ground beneath you is flat.
That's right. I mean, I would walk to the ends of the earth, and by that I mean to the polar ice cap.
Yeah.
The ice wall.
Yeah, before you fall off.
You know, that's the theory about the ice wall.
Yeah, is that there's an ice wall surrounding the entire world.
Right. And that's what keeps you from, like, circumnavigating. Like, that's why there is no circumnavigation.
Exactly. And that's also why you can't, that's where our air conditioning comes from. Is we plug into the ice wall and then it gets cold everywhere else.
Well, the other thing is that, like, when you think you're circumnavigating the globe, you're going in a circle.
Yeah. Hang a right.
Yeah.
But I'm actually going straight. Yeah. It's so crazy.
So I miss them. I miss the scrappiness of them. I, as a Lakers fan, I'm very sad to say this, but the Jason Tatum pick is incredible.
Great.
And I would think, I've said this before, I would not assume that you just make a progression to the finals next year. That's just not the way the league works.
Yeah.
It's like the Thunder thought they were going to be back in the finals over and over and over.
Yeah.
And they never were. I would not assume that Jason Tatum makes the next step, because we have also seen players have lots of skills early on.
Yeah.
And then the skills, there's a cap to, like, he might be Paul Pierce. He might be Antoine Walker.
Yeah. Two players who in their time were considered the big two on the Boston Celtics teams that went 27 and 55.
The original Shimmier.
That's right.
Antoine Walker.
Why don't you shoot fours? Why do you shoot so many threes? Because they don't have four.
So anyway, that's what I miss about them.
I am not going to miss bum-ass Marcus Morris. I don't like Marcus Morris.
Do you like Markieff?
I do like Markieff.
Oh.
No, I don't.
I was going to say, like, I fucking hate Jern Collins. Love Jason Collins.
Yeah, you hate the assistant on the Warriors.
Yeah.
He's gross.
But love the gay one.
Yes. I feel like he thinks he's so good.
Yeah.
And he's not. And that's just something where, like, if he had a couple of good games this series and it was like, all right, well, great. You think you're good. It was the opposite of my Kobe corollary, where if Kobe missed his first couple of shots, it was a good thing for the Lakers because he'd get everybody involved and they win those games. If he made his first three shots, he was going to shoot all the game and they were going to lose in the fourth quarter because he was going to miss them all. So I feel like with my Kobe corollary, Marcus Morris thing was too much. I don't like him, and I think I'm not going to miss seeing him in the NBA playoffs.
I'm not going to see him woof in Larry Nance's face.
Woof.
As if he's anything.
No. No, because Larry Nance is an NBA Finals participant.
That's right.
And you can't take that away from me.
No. He's the son of a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
I think Larry Nance is in the Hall of Fame. His number's been retired by the Cavs.
All right.
What are you going to miss about the Houston Rockets?
I'm going to miss PJ Tucker.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to miss a 6-point, 15-rebound game where he's just playing fucking good-ass defense.
I will say he fucking camps in the lane.
Oh, my God.
Breaks the three-second rule over and
all
over
the time.
I actually timed one last night when I tweeted it.
Yeah.
He was in the lane for 7 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, if you can get away with it, get away with it.
All right.
I'm going to miss PJ Tucker.
Love him.
I feel very weird saying that, but I'm going to miss PJ Tucker. What are you not going to miss about the Houston Morey balls?
I will not miss James Harden and CP3. I'm very happy to see them go.
Yeah.
I guess the only, like, inverse thing I could say is I love seeing Chris Paul lose. Don't care if he's on the court or not on the court. I love, like, most players in the league, I would say, they, even James Harden, I say he can never win a ring in his career, and he'll be fine. Like, he's rich, has all the companionship that he desires, can pretty much do anything he wants with his life, and I think he'll be fine not winning a ring.
Yeah,
I think
he's going to be just fine because of the amount of sex that he has.
Yeah,
which is what you just said. Money,
yeah. I don't think Chris Paul will be okay. I think it's very clear that he cares a lot about it.
He does.
I think that he doesn't seem to care that he pisses and alienates people. Pisses people off, and like, there's things about his demeanor that are unpleasant.
Yeah,
and unlikable. And I would argue that they eventually do get in his way of winning.
Do you think that, I mean, and I don't know this, do you think that that's something that he takes outside of basketball?
I bet not, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I bet he's a delight. I was also reading this week about how delightful Jordan Peterson, the Canadian insane gross intellectual, how, what a warm, wonderful family man he
but he has a family. I thought he was,
yeah, he's got kids.
Oh.
So I was reading a thing about how, what
one of your cats barfed before the show, and I'm ready to barf right now.
Jordan Peterson is the Chris Paul of pseudo intellectuals. Similarly cantankerous. No, I mean, I would even say Chris Paul's not that bad. But listen, my point is that these guys are probably great. Like, I was thinking, like, I actually did a commercial that was not with Blake Griffin, but Blake Griffin was in, that never aired.
Yeah.
And Chris Paul was on the set. Yeah. And I, like, if I was Oscar Nunez from The Office and I was doing State Farm commercials with Chris Paul, I could see myself being like, man, this guy's really nice and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd probably be faced with some decision about, like, how do I really feel about this guy?
Yeah.
But all I know about him is his demeanor on the court on camera.
Yeah. And that's tough.
And I won't miss that at all. I just miss seeing it fail.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has had bad injury luck. He's played some excellent games this playoffs.
Yeah.
But I would say the idea that he's on some level, like, in terms of playoff raising his game, he's not on a legendary level. Like, he's not on a level with, certainly not with LeBron, not with Kobe, not with Jordan, not with arguably Derek Fisher and Robert Horry.
Wow.
I mean, if you look at the average talent and abilities of a Derek Fisher versus what he's able to produce in a playoff game,
yeah,
he has created more moments.
He's got a better playoff career.
And I would say Chris Paul hasn't created as many as Steph Curry or Kyrie.
And I mean, you know, you think about the comeback at this is that Chris Paul has the greatest real plus minus in the playoffs of any player since they started tracking it, which is, you know, not that long ago.
Right.
And it was either real plus minus or like actual plus minus or something. He's just got incredibly high plus minus. And it's like, why hasn't that translated into wins? Is it
well,
luck?
I will
is
say
it
that
luck? Do you think it's luck a little?
Some, I will say a lot of advanced metrics are difficult in the playoffs because of the limited number of,
I feel like I remember this not being an advanced metric. I feel like it was just,
well, real plus minus certainly would.
Real is, but I think it was just plus minus.
Just plus minus. Yeah. Well, see, the thing is a lot of those stats are very skewed because, for example, he has good playoff stats.
Yeah.
However, he has actually like not played that many great playoff teams because he didn't like
go
very far.
Yeah.
So like he rarely played like the best defense of the playoffs in any of his playoff runs because he didn't make it to the conference finals or the finals.
Yeah.
So it's harder to take those stats in a way. Like if you look at because yesterday I was looking at the offensive net ratings for like Golden State and Cavaliers.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to say much about them because, like, the Cavaliers' defense is looking better, right?
Yeah.
They were the 29th rated defense in the league in the regular season, but they've played, the only good offense they've played is Toronto.
Yeah.
So,
and they shut them down.
But it's hard to say how good their defense is now.
Yes, yeah. And, I mean, they'll get a pretty good test on Thursday, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, and also the Golden State, who had a good defense in the regular season, just played the best offense in the league.
Yeah.
And
so that'll come down.
And they have the best defensive rating in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Having played Houston, which is crazy. So there is a certain amount of luck with Chris Paul. However, like injury luck is luck, but he's also old. And also D'Antoni shortened his rotation to like 6-7 players.
Yeah, and he was pre-injured before he was injured.
Too. Yes.
So
it's a little bit like when people say Zaza fucked up Kawhi. but Kawhi, I believe, had just had an injury or like there was a little bit of
there's a little bit of something there.
Yeah.
Shows.
Wait, did I we talked about what we're going to miss and not miss from both.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about shows. Do you have a show coming up this week?
This week.
Between now and Thursday?
No, I don't. No. No, I mean, it's
today's Tuesday. Yeah.
we're coming
actually,
back at you.
I'm going to be at the UCB Inner Sanctum tonight doing a show called Cameron McIntosh something.
Oh, nice.
I've been asked to guest on a show where me, John Hartman, and Ross Bryant
from
Baby Wants Candy,
yeah,
we're all playing
yeah.
versions of Cameron McIntosh, and other musical improv groups are going to perform.
Who is Cameron McIntosh?
He is the producer of Les Mis and Phantom.
Got it.
British superstar producer that sort of brought Andrew Lloyd Webber here.
Got it, yes.
And sort of created the modern British pop musical spectacle.
Okay.
Which was a much, you know, people hated this movement when it came to Broadway.
Yeah, yeah,
because every show was like, didn't have a great book. A lot of the shows didn't have book at all because the whole show would be sung through.
Yeah.
And then every show had like a spectacle. So it's like the chandelier falling or a helicopter or a like.
Yeah. Or like Spider-Man crashing through a floor and injuring himself.
Spider-Man hanging from a wire when my friends saw it. Spider-Man, his rigging broke, and he just hung from a wire as they fixed it and just, like, riffed with the audience as he, like, dangled from the
does ceiling. Whatever a spider can.
Yeah, which is riff with the audience.
Yeah. That show sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are three very talented people.
Well, so other musical improv groups come up and do 15-minute sets, and then we, as Kevin McIntosh, apparently critique them.
That sounds hilarious.
Yeah.
Very inside musical and improv.
Yes, very strange.
Great for this podcast audience.
And also Thursday, actually, what time is the game Thursday?
Game's at 6.
I have Magic to do at 7, so yeah. I'll be missing that game.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got YouTube TV.
I do have YouTube TV. I'll just have my phone with me on stage.
Yeah.
Watching it.
That's important.
And Golden State will be at home.
Yeah.
So they managed their road series.
Hey.
They got their two at home, which I'm sure they would like. It's funny because in the last one, I was like, oh, it's, you know, they get to steal one on the road. And then when we got to game 7, I was like, I bet they'd rather be at home.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very much so.
So you have no shows coming up, but you'll have some on the weekend.
Yeah. I got some.
Go ahead and plug them through. Because, like, people got to get their affairs in order.
Yeah. I think I got a show on. Do I have a show on Sunday night? I think my next show is next Thursday.
Oh, okay.
So I think I'm off until then. So.
Cool. Yeah. I think that's all I got. We finished Thrones in Orlando.
Yeah, congrats.
My next big thing is I'm producing a show going to Edinburgh Fringe.
Nice,
it's called Voldemort and the Teenage Hogwarts Musical Parody.
Oh, shit. That sounds fun.
Yep, and we're starting up the next couple weeks. So I'll be talking more about that. But if you're a Harry Potter fan, we're doing some shows in L.A., and then we'll be doing them in Scotland.
Yeah, head through, come see those.
Yeah.
All right.
Send us an email, ruleofthreespodcast@gmail.com, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Sounds perfect.
Bye.
Bye.